Facebook tagging algorithm take away?
Yes, thank you. Okay, so in the short period that I have, I'm going to present some preliminary research into an online cultural practice known as Facebook laughing. And I'll talk about the Facebook algorithm that enables the practice and discuss three main strands of it. The first is flaff as poetry, second is flaff as playful communication, and third is flaff as activism, but I won't go too much into that one, I don't really have time. So I'll finish up briefly by talking about a little bit, a tiny sliver of the techno-political implications of flaff and how it enables Facebook users to hide from ad profiling algorithm of Facebook. So what is flaff? Well, it's a little bit hard to describe, actually. There are a couple of things that get referred to as flaff, and it's not immediately clear how to disentangle them from one another. So I'm going to suggest that it's a prime example of what Latour calls a hybrid or quasi-object. So it's neither entirely human nor entirely non-human. There's bits of people in there, there's bits of computer code, there's bits of Facebook, and it's a big jumble. And it's in part assembled from the collective cultural production of Facebook's 1 billion active users, and that's sort of pretty important, I think. As a practice, Facebook flaffing rests upon the ability to tag Facebook pages, groups, apps, and friends, which was apparently introduced first in 2009. Typing the at symbol, followed by one or more characters in a Facebook text field, results in the appearance of this drop-down text box with tagging options based on the characters after the at symbol. So the text box, however, typically only shows a few groups or pages that contain or relate to the phrase you've put in. So I've typed in here T-A-O-S... Oh, no, that's not right. This next one, here's an... Bumping my thing. T-A-O-S-T. So it's a common misspelling of toast. And here's a bunch of the... So we've got a Toast corner that someone has made a page of, or they've checked in and they've made like a typo. So I could use one of them. And so what I'm going to suggest is that these misspellings and a bunch of other little features of flaff are representations of an oral kind of culture that is present in sort of Facebook and digital communication stuff. So because the tagging function was first brought out to tag people, the algorithm prefers names of friends before anyone else. And it dynamically updates as you keep adding in more, you know, characters after the at. And as long as it can find like a group or page that has those characters in it. Sometimes it'll find like a thing, an example that it thinks is like a close match. So if you put in something that's slightly similar, it'll chuck up something. It's a little bit opaque, and this is sort of like part of the point of it, is that it's sort of really hard to understand how it works. And you can really, the best way to figure it out is to have a play with it. So it's this mix of freedom within constraints that the algorithm itself poses that makes flaffing so much fun and gives it a lot of its meaning. It wouldn't be a particularly unique practice without the challenge of making something out of the not quite exhaustive, but certainly exhausting, breadth and range of pages that there are on Facebook that one can tag. So because of the way the tagging algorithm weighs certain pages over others, it can make certain pages particularly hard to tag. So if you want a word like this or but, it can be really hard because it will show you everything but a page that has the word this in it. So it's got get this, it's got get this and Tony Martin, get this and that. I tried got but, but it's giving me sexy but not porn and naughty but classy. And a couple of these ones. So a lot of the fun and enjoyment from flaff comes from a combination of like the serendipity of finding these like weird pages, and figuring out sort of the opaque algorithm and working within it to produce some kind of comment or poem at the end. So this is what initially drew me to flaff, and it can be really fun to trade flaff comments with others back and forth in like a style of, you know, improvisation, and we just sort of see who can get like the stupidest comment, who can find like the dumbest Facebook page, you know, on a given sort of theme. So I found some like Hebrew characters somehow. I just input it, and we had a bit of a back and forth with that. And it's kind of fun to be an amateur cultural archaeologist. Yeah, so I'm looking through and I'm looking at, look at all these stupid pages that there are on Facebook. So that's kind of cool. And in a presentation to the Personal Democracy Forum in 2009, Dana Boyd described the findings of her research into American teen social media use by pinpointing what at that time was driving some certain teen sort of uptake of Facebook over MySpace. And so she identified a sort of digital version of white flight. And so while middle-class educated white teens, the sort of like Tumblr demographic, if you want to think about it like that, are not like the main demographic on Facebook anymore, and they haven't been for a long time, they certainly constitute like a main, I guess part of what Facebook was after was that demographic, and so it sort of catered to them and it's brought them along, and this is sort of like some of their cultural production. So I got some stuff about Facebook and demographics. So an example of the diversity, however, as you can kind of see, there's already like Arabic text and Hebrew characters in there. On the week that Facebook hit 1 billion users, the average user was 22 years old, or the median user was 22 years old. And of the top five countries joining, the only English-speaking nation was the United States. The four others were Brazil, India, Indonesia, and Mexico. And so these non-English pages are also turning up, and you can kind of use them too. So here's one. It's really hard to get non-English characters if you don't have a non-English keyboard. So usually they'll be like repeated characters. So here's lots of N's, and I found this one. You saw some examples of the other ones earlier. And I'm not really sure what this says about like the way that Facebook encodes the text that you input into it. It's probably something to do with like the character set and the way that it translates into the algorithm and then goes and searches up for pages. But it would probably take either someone more fluent in more than one language and probably like with an engineering background to figure out like how Facebook encodes its text and does its searching. So the point of mentioning all of this is sort of to gesture towards some of the factors that have been gone into the production of the back history of pages and the source material. So, and I'll talk about like the three different practices of FLAF in a little bit more detail. So the first one, as I said, is FLAF as a kind of poetry. Second is FLAF as kind of communication, so it just like sometimes turns up. You can use FLAF in any kind of comment thread. And the third one is like a sort of emerging activist technique where you use FLAF to sort of drown out racists and sexists and stuff like that, and just like muddy a discussion that's going in like a really bad direction. So here's an example. Here's a FLAF sort of poem. This was left on a friend's Facebook wall. "Hello, stranger. What amazing hardcore/screamo band are you?" So it looks like, if you can kind of see, the comma is black, which means it's not tagged. So he's put that in and assembled it from the "Hello, stranger" tag, comma, "What amazing hardcore screamo band are you?" And so he's just put two different pages together and he's made like this message. And so Austin Islam has responded, "Fear before the march of flames," and then they have this little sort of conversation thing. It'll often get used, so FLAF poets will do this on Facebook and then they'll screenshot it and it'll end up in a chapbook with a bunch of other words and like glitchy text, JPEGs with overlaid images, sort of like hipstermatic type filters and stuff. That kind of crops up a lot. And this is where FLAF sort of has its roots in a net lit sort of movement called alt lit or alternative literature. And that sort of has, it sort of harks back to like Usenet culture as well. So here's a, no, that's, sorry, that's a chapbook thing. So you can kind of see here's a FLAF sort of status or where some FLAF has turned up, and he's like juxtaposed that with like a Facebook comments thing and some kind of instant message thread. It's like all about like literature and text and like the weird digital stuff. Do you want me to pause? I'm about to move on. Okay. Here's a poem that I wrote and put on my friend's Theron Jacobs wall. I backdated it to the year 1980. And it's a poem about Jimmy Carter the day after he lost the election to Ronald Reagan. It didn't start out as that. So this is like a example of like the process behind FLAFing. So I originally got inspired by this line from a Skrillex song where it's a vocal sample. It says, "Ayo, I'm eating Fondip right now, not giving a fuck." And you know, the rest of the song kind of happens. And so I sort of built on that image and found a couple of these other like pages. And then I ended up with this idea of like hanging out with Jimmy Carter and getting like drunk and then being mad at the American voting system. And so I totally didn't start with that idea in mind at all. It was that was like an emergent process of like doing the fluff itself, this is sort of what resulted. And so going back to the history of fluff, it kind of predates the Facebook tagging algorithm by some years. The where did I go? I lost my spot. The original fluff practice was about Google searches and obscure Google searches and finding snippets of text through weird Google phrases like pizza, unicorn, donkey, monkey or something, and then grabbing text from those searches and turning that into a poem. And Gary Sullivan sort of was one of the earliest fluff poets, and he's contextualized it within a sort of post 9/11 ironic culture. He has this anecdote of this listserv, or this mailing list, where after 9/11 it was like dead quiet, and while everyone else was sort of like, you know, mourning, this sudden email appeared on the mailing list with like this really obscure, it's like crappy fart stench on my Star Spangled Banner or something, and like the contents of the email was just like blowing a raspberry or something. It was like this giant, weird, obscure thumbing the nose at authority and like the seriousness of the situation and like weird stuff that predates, I guess, what we know now as weird Twitter, if you're familiar with that. So this stuff is sort of similar to the work of people like John Cayley, who's worked with like process poetry. So here's his 2009 piece, An Edge of Chaos, which is all about the process of, again, repeated Google searches that result in like unique searches or no hits or something. So Gary Sullivan, one of the early fluff poets, had this three-pronged definition of fluff, which included a treatment of fluff as like an aesthetic and even like a verb. So it's like fluff is this doing thing. It's like bringing out the fluffiness. One of the other definitions was like as a communal practice. And so even though the same poets aren't necessarily doing the Facebook fluffing, that communal aspect of it is like definitely really prominent in like Facebook fluff. So the second type of fluff is the playful fluff commenter, and this is like a less deliberate or planned type of comment. So my first engagement with it was through a comment thread sparked by this Facebook image that a guy posted and tagged with the name, like the profile of Facebook poet Steve Roggenbuck. And so his fans basically turned up in the comment thread and started fluffing away underneath this image, which was tagged, like geotagged from Enmore Road in Sydney. And so I looked at it and went, whoa, that's really close to me. And I started like engaging with it and had this really long comment thread. So these are the people who commented before me. And they're like most of these are sort of like kind of friends with each other. And then I joined in and I was like, whoa, I'm acknowledging that it's from Enmore Theatre near Accra, because that's like the closest I could get to mentioning Enmore Road, and would like, so I've hinted at like Enmore Road, and that's a photo, and you can see that the friendship is the best relation tag is kind of broken since it's happened, so that page is deleted. So again, it's like a evolving dynamic thing. But me and Luke had this sort of back and forth thing where he tried to name me through these other Facebook tags. So we weren't actually friends at the time, so he couldn't actually tag me, but he like send me messages and stuff, and it just keeps going for like a couple more pages. So, I went too far forward. But the third and the final type of fluff I don't really have time to go into is a kind of activist fluffist, where fluff is often used for like short circuit tedious discussions or arguments, or disengage from like the rope arguments that like sort of happen over and over again. You know how like you get into the same kinds of discussion like over and over and over again? It's like, oh God, we're having the libertarian argument again, or we're having the white privilege argument again. Well, you break out some fluff and you send them this sort of social message that you're not wanted here, you don't get the rules of the community yet, and that's sort of really interesting as well. And it all happens like through this weird absurdity thing. So the orality of it, I want to sort of highlight through this academic, this book by Brenda Dannett, which came out in 2001. She presented the research that she'd done into the sort of late 90s ethnographic digital communication stuff that she... So she majorly looked at like engaging with text in a sort of practical way, like playing with smileys and emoticons and highlighting, I guess, the materiality of the communication medium itself. So I got this really good quote. Oops, that's too far. She says that in text-based digital communications, the need to say in writing what we have been used to saying in speech calls attention to the communicative means employed in formulating the message. Reduced transparency of message heightens metalinguistic awareness and leads us to treat words, letters, and other typographic symbols as objects and to play with them. So this frame of like transparency and whether we're like seeing through, whether we're seeing through the text to its like content or whether we're seeing like the surface and we're sort of playing with it and playing with language itself, I think is a really good way to think about and think through fluff. So in the case of the fluff, as we can say, he's drawing attention to the surface by composing fluff, which remains relatively unusual to most people. So most people aren't particularly familiar with fluff. And it reminds people on Facebook of the medium that they're communicating in, like the medium itself. You see fluff, you kind of can't ignore the fact that you're on Facebook, or Facebook fluff, you can't ignore the fact you're on Facebook. Just one last little quick mention about the political aesthetics of fluff. So Caleb Hildebrand, who writes the Flanner in My Pajamas Tumblr, wrote some notes on fluff and suggested that it functions in an anti-commercial sort of manner. By exposing friends and acquaintances to this repurposed and subversive use of Facebook tagging, according to Hildebrand, it asks naive users of the machine to consider the ways in which their sincerely expressed sentiments may be twisted and blasphemed. So it'll be like, I love you so much, and that'll be like an earnest Facebook page, and now some dude is coming along and putting it sandwiched in between two lines about Ahmadinejad and like nuclear holocaust or something, you know? It's just sort of really weird juxtaposition. And one of the seemingly incidental benefits of fluff, which is like really amazing about it, is that it has this effect on Facebook's profiling algorithm, which is like the way that Facebook extracts value from, you know, the Facebook user itself, is by, you know, targeting you and serving up ads that are relevant to you. And Austin-based software developer Kevin Ludlow wondered whether it may be possible to simply overwhelm it with too much information. So in a post describing his tactic of deliberately manipulating Facebook's advertising algorithm, he coins this term Bayesian flooding. So I'll read a quote. Over the past several months, I've entered a myriad of life events to my Facebook profile using the new timeline feature. Some of those life events are true, and some of them are not. In my fictitious life, I've explored a dozen different religions, had countless injuries and broken bones, suffered twice through cancer, been married, divorced, fathered children all around the world, and have even fought for numerous foreign militaries. After this, he talks about how the Facebook ad serving algorithm had no idea what to give him. So before, it knew he was like, you know, white, certain, you know, middle 30-something, software developer from Austin and could like target him and, you know, locationally based, send him ads and stuff. After that, it didn't know whether to serve him up ads about like learning Hebrew from the Holy Land's greatest scholars or I forget what the other one was. Or sell him like Gucci, knockoff Gucci handbags. So he had like two of those. So this is really reminiscent of this other project called CV Dazzle, which is all about creating makeup and hairstyles that break computer vision algorithms. And so you can kind of see them here. So these top ones, the tagging algorithm finds faces, and these bottom ones, faces are obscured. The algorithm doesn't see a face there. So it's like blurring or hiding from computer vision. There's another example is this font, Razzle Dazzle, which has been designed so that optical character text recognition can't like read the font. You could put that in and like no computer font reader will be able to handle it. Of course, a human could, and this is sort of part of the point, is you can recognize a real human behind the fluff poet or behind the font, presumably. Here's an example. You fluff up your profile, you know, you add a whole bunch of random crap. Like this guy, my friend Luke, he works for Tupac Is Alive and a small kitten's stomach. And he went to the University of Cuddling. So, I've been doing this as well, and, like, it totally works. Like, so the first time I ever tagged some, like, Arabic fluff, I started getting ads for, like, Middle Eastern women in your area, you know? So it's kind of fun, as well as being, like, a good way to be anti-corporate. So my final quote, and I won't read it, is this idea from Zadie Smith that I thought was really great in this review from The Social Network, or her review of The Social Network, this idea of the person as a mystery. So all of like Facebook and data and profiling is all about like quantifying the person. So it's like you take all your quizzes and you find out about yourself and the data tells you. Well, this is about like, well, I don't fucking know who I am, and neither does Dana. So let's have this like person as a mystery. So yeah, thank you. That's Facebook Fluff.